Welcome back, everybody, to Tell It Anyway, the little storytelling podcast that takes place in a little office above a butcher in a market in Los Angeles. Okay. This week, we are telling stories along the theme of, was it worth it? And to tell stories, we have two fabulous ladies and one guy in the corner making jokes. I don't need to introduce Matt Flanagan. You know him too well.
Representing the males in this corner.
Good luck. I think we have like maybe the three.
That's true. I wouldn't want to go up against you three. I would not. I'll forfeit.
Well, one of the ladies that we have here is a first timer, and her name is Julia Grob.
And if Grob.
Grob. So Julia Grob is here with us. And let's see what else I got wrong. She is an actress and a writer, very talented. She created and starred in the musical web series East Willie B. Is that right?
That's right.
Oh, good. And she was a writer on ABC's Gallivant. Mm-hmm. ABC?
ABC.
Now I doubt myself.
You're doubting everything now. Oh. Is that how it's pronounced or is it ABC?
Yeah. ABC. And she's now a writer on the hit Disney series Stuck in the Middle.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
And then returning to the program.
Returning champ.
For the record, third time. Woo. Ms. Sarah Kleinman. As you know, listeners to the program know that Sarah Kleinman is an actual midwife. She is a popper of babies out of vaginas. And she's also, consequently, a fabulous storyteller. She is the originator of such phrases as, I'm fainting. And the discoverer of a white chocolate dildo.
All true story.
It's a good story. If you haven't heard, go back and listen.
So I'm super excited to hear what these ladies think was or was not worth it.
What the hell is Jax doing down
Jax
there?
Wants attention. Oh, we also have a podcast dog.
He's the cutest dog.
He's the cutest
ever
dog.
He's our therapy dog.
He is a he's a little bit of an unlicensed therapy dog. I've often thought about getting him actually therapy dogged.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Should.
What do you have to go through? What kind of screening process is there?
There was a whole article in the New Yorker about it, and people were bringing like lizards to museums.
Therapy lizard?
Therapy dog.
Therapy pet. Yeah.
So, all right. So, as we normally do with people who've never been on the show before, we make them go first. So, Julia Grob, do tell us.
Grob.
Shut up.
Now. Say my name.
Julia Grob.
You're goddamn right.
I will start by saying I moved to LA about 2 years ago, and I was a nomad for 2 years. I lived in a teepee, I house sat, I cat
Wait, what?
Sat.
What does that mean, lived in a teepee?
No, I literally lived in a teepee in my dad's backyard in Ojai, California for about 3 months. And I'm a total New York City kid. So it was a year of adventure.
Why did your dad have a teepee?
Because my dad's a hippie.
Wow. And he built it himself?
They have a teepee. It's like their guest room on their property. After 2 years of kind of like nomad living, we decided to give up our apartment in Brooklyn, my husband and I. And we moved a pod of stuff across the country, which having worked in New York City as a theater actor and worked in nonprofits, I had very little things of value. But of these things, we had a mattress that my husband bought for our first Valentine's Day to impress me.
Aww.
All his savings on a really nice mattress. We had a lamp that was given to us at our wedding. That was a beautiful lamp. And I had a precious bike that I loved more than anything. And before we loaded it into this pod in New York, my husband for some reason thought it was a good time to like take it to the bike shop and like get it all fixed up. So he spent several hundred dollars and had like all the right lights and baskets. And we put it into a pod, and about 10 days later, it arrives in Los Angeles. And in LA, I live in Los Feliz, which is like The specific street I live on, a good friend said, is the Cipher of the Bazaar, because I happen to be between the Scientology Center, Kaiser Permanente, and Barnesdale Park, which is basically often a homeless encampment.
Right. Frank Lloyd Wright building at the top and all the homeless at the bottom.
Exactly. The pod arrived. We brought the bike into our little patio. And about a week later, my husband was like, look, it's just sitting here. Let's move it over to your cousin's house until you start riding it. And he likes to keep things clean. I was like, that's fine, cool. He loads the bike into the car, into our RAV4, and comes back in for lunch. And 5 minutes later, goes back out and shortly comes back into the house. And he's like, bad news, your bike's gone. And I'm like... Not,
now,
you know,
who are you betting took it? The Scientologists, the homeless, or the people from the hospital?
Great question.
Any one of these is
entirely
possible.
Anyone was an option. Right. And I'm like pretty pissed off, but I don't like to get mad at my husband. Like, he was just trying to do his best. The gate was broken in our building. He forgot to close the car. And at this point, it was summer, and there was a mattress, like a bed bug mattress that had been put on the street by someone else. And as I walk, there had been a guy who literally was like lying back, like lounging on the bed bug mattress facing our garage. So I'm like,
I know.
Suspect number one.
I'm like, suspect number one is gone when I get there. My husband sort of gives up and he's like, well, what are we going to do? We live in a city. Like, we're not going to track down this bike. Both of our bikes are gone, by the way. So two bikes, 5 minutes gone. And I become obsessed with it. So I start driving around the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I'm looking everywhere. And after several rounds, I round Barnesdale Park. And I see what looks like a homeless bike shop. It's an encampment.
Oh my God.
With several guys sitting in front.
It's like a shanty town that sells bikes.
Fixing bikes. And I call Khalil, my husband, right away. And I'm like, I don't know. I can't see our bikes right now, but that looks suspicious. They're around the corner. Someone's putting on wheels. There's like a whole situation going on.
Suspect number two.
Yeah. He goes out. I drive the car home, and he calls me very quickly and was like, yeah, you're going to want to see this. I walk around the corner, and there is a man who is literally... my husband's pointing into the tent and he's like, that's my bike. And another guy is putting brand new wheels on his bike. And I walk up and I'm like, those are our wheels.
Oh my God.
And the guy who's putting the wheels on the bike is like, I don't know what you're talking about. No, I just found these wheels and they're my wheels. I'm putting it on. And we're like,
except the Scientologist literature. Yeah.
I don't know. Ask them. They just dropped off the bikes. My husband is black, by the way, and I think in a moment with a homeless interaction, the guys who were not black, who were homeless, were sort of like, I don't know, man, whatever, if it's your bike, you know, go ahead, come in, you can take the bike. And at this point, he like goes in and he removes his frame, which is everything's been removed from the frame. Really? It's just a frame.
What's the time?
Time. Yeah. I think this was several hours later because looking. It was like, it was at night by this time.
This is like a streamlined operation to strip down things that quick.
But also not that smart. You stole a bike around the corner and it just made it around the corner. Like, go farther into Barnesdale or something. But they're like, someone just dropped stuff off here. We don't know anything. If it's your bike, take it. He takes the frame. We get all four of our wheels back, but my frame is nowhere to be seen.
Mm.
So we walk home and he's like, oh, I'm so sorry, babe. I'm so sorry. I'm like, yeah, this sucks. But I felt so violated.
Sure.
And also was like, if your bike frame was only around the corner, I'm going to find my bike. It's somewhere in these.
Right. This is clearly a local operation.
Exactly. Right. So every day I'm driving of that week and I'm like looking around.
This is where you go, Liam Neath. Yeah. I have a very particular set of skills.
Revenge fantasy.
I lived in a teepee. I will find you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I go crazy looking for my bike. And one day I see the man who was putting my wheels on his bike with what looks like a very nice turquoise Schwinn woman's bike. Not my bike at all. Totally not my bike. But I see him putting these, fixing up this woman's bike, and it looks nice. Yeah. It's like has brown. Like, it's a really cute Schwinn bike.
How do you recognize them as your wheels?
Yeah. Well, the wheels we had gotten back already, but right. We knew our wheels were new, and the guy was putting new wheels on, and they had the frame. But because we all live in the same neighborhood,
investigating a coincidence.
Yes. Yes. I now see the man who was responsible for using my wheels with a new woman's bike. And every time I see him, I'm like, I know that's not that motherfucker's bike. I right. know it.
Obviously.
I don't know whose it is. But if I were to come up, clearly he steals bikes. If I were to go up to him and tell him that was my bike, would he be able to say it wasn't? I don't think so. He doesn't know where it came from. And it becomes this revenge fantasy. And I start to identify with this turquoise bike as if it's my bike. I'm like, my so bike's gone.
Right. Yeah.
But... This
the universe owes yes. you a bike.
The turquoise yeah. bike. It will be like getting her.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like it will all come full circle. Sure.
Is it like the transitive property? Like if A stole B's bike, then yeah. C's then B, bike belongs to yeah. B. Yeah. And B's bike equals C.
Totally. Yeah. Made complete sense to me. And one morning early, I am like driving home from yoga, and at that same bed bug mattress across the street from my house.
Still there.
At the same bed bug mattress, the turquoise Schwinn is just leaning against the gate, literally opposite my garage, right in front of my building. And I don't see anyone next to me. And I'm like, this is a sign.
Yeah.
Like it's sitting, someone brought it for me. It's sitting across the street from my house. And I promptly walk into I park my car. I walk right into my apartment. And I'm like, babe, I need you. There's a bike across the street. It's almost mine, and we're going to make it mine right now. And Khalil, who is like, this is how you know this man is made for me, yep. dropped whatever he was doing. He was like, all right, babe,
this
let's
like
go.
This is like Lady Bike Beth.
Yes. And it's like 8:30 in the morning, okay? So we like march promptly out our building, and at this point, once we get back out there, there is now a sort of strung out, very skinny, young-ish woman who's fighting with the bike. Like, she's pulling it off the gate, but it's stuck to the gate, and she's, like, wrestling with the bike, and she looks...
Oh, my God.
She's been sleeping in this mattress. She looks a mess. So we promptly, like, walk...
I love how the bed bug mattress is like a hotel that's, like... Across people cycle through it.
Yeah, they do.
It's a cheap stay. It's a bed bug Airbnb.
Like, we're across the street from it, and I'm sort of like, well, I guess my revenge moment's over. And we walk up the street, and then my husband quickly, like, crosses the street towards the bike, and I'm like, I don't know what he's going to do. I have no idea. And he goes up to her, and he's like, where did you get that bike? And she looks at him, and she's like, I've had it for a week. And I'm like, well, my bike was stolen a week ago, and that's my bike. And she's like a deer in headlights. And she's like, no, but I've had it longer than a week. And this man gave it to me. And I'm like, well, that man stole it from me because that right there is my bike. And my husband's talking to her. He's like, yeah, so this is my wife's bike. Like, you're going to be in a better situation if you give it to us right now. And at this point, I start looking at her, and she's like really strung out and sort of like greasy and sad looking. And she looks at me, and she's like, well, how do I know you guys didn't just make this up just to get my bike? And we're like, do we look like the type of people who would do that? No, like we don't need to make up that this is our bike.
We're salt of the earth.
Yeah.
You've seen our teepee.
Exactly. And she's like, how do I know? And at this, and then she's like, come on, guys, like, this is my only form of transportation.
Oh, God.
And as soon as she says that, in my heart, I'm like, okay, revenge fantasy is sort of like fading, like going away. I'm like, compassion. I don't know. Maybe this is not a great idea. But I don't really know how to stop it at this point. And I sort of like look at my husband, and he's like, well, this is, I don't, you know, what do you want us to do? This is my wife's bike. You don't know where it came from. And she's like, come on, don't start my day like this. And she's sort of pleading a little. And I internally am like, well, I can't admit that it's not my bike because I'm already in too deep. Like, we're here. He's all like revved up. And so I go to her and I'm like, look, I was like, it's fine. If you don't want to give it to me, that's cool. But I just want you to know, like, I put in a police report last week, which I did. I followed through on a police report. I was so angry. I was like, I put in a police report last week on my bike. As soon as I said police report, her hands magically lift off the bike. God. And she's like, well, why didn't you say that to begin with? And my husband's hand promptly goes down on the bike. And I'm like looking from both of them to the other. And he's like, walk. And I'm like, okay. And we walk away with this woman's bike.
Oh, my God.
At this point, I start spiraling downhill. And I'm like, oh my God, was it worth it? This is not a good look for me.
You were victimized. You were victimized by local neighborhood people.
Yes.
But in a way, she was just victimized by local neighborhood
people. It's hard to tell right now if it's a story of triumph or a story of shame.
Exactly. And in the process, I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh my God, here she is. Here's this woman who's sleeping on the streets. This is her only form of transportation. Yep. A older man just gave her the bike. And instantly in my head, I'm like, it's a blowjob bike. Like, what did she have to do? What did she do for this bike? Like, how did she get it? And now now she had to give head in the park to get a bike for transportation. And just like with my privilege, because I'm angry at someone, I promptly am stealing her blowjob bike. Like, what else will she have to do for transportation? But my husband, this is like all going on in my head. I have nothing to say. And he's just like, keep walking so that she doesn't see where we live. So we're just like, keep walking down the street. We do a big circle. We bring the bike into our apartment. And that's when I lose it. And I'm like, oh my God, Khalil, this is the worst. Like, I'm the worst person. You didn't get my message when I was trying to halt the operation. And I'm like, I can't keep this bike.
You pushed me into it. What are you talking about, woman?
I'm like, how am I even going to ride this bike in the neighborhood? What if someone sees me? Are they going to jump me? Like, and then...
be paid forward or backwards. Somebody will take your bike.
I have no idea. You see it and ride it. Right. I'm like, bring back feelings.
Exactly.
Yeah. We're going to have to go out and give head for a clean bike.
Right. That's very logic. I probably spent the full next day driving around the neighborhood trying to find her. Did not find her. And the bike.
You really did look for her, huh?
I looked for her. I posted the bike. I took a picture of the bike. I posted on the Nextdoor app.
Oh.
And it was just like a neighborhood app. And someone was like, oh, I think that's my neighbor's bike. It was stolen. And I was like, victory. This came back full circle. Now I'm giving the bike back to the original owner.
Right.
And then I follow up with him and he's like, yeah, I don't know. She moved. She's gone.
Oh.
So that's.
Wait, did you
really
try? How did you look for her? Did you shake meth? Because we like to shake treats with our cat when it's gone in the neighborhood.
That would have been the way to do it. Or just like send someone out naked, like
just shake a little meth. Hello?
Just put a little note on the bed bug mattress that says bike.
I know.
Yeah, for anybody
she
passing
didn't
through.
Come back to the bed bug mattress.
Of course not. She's terrified.
No, I have never ridden it.
What?
Ever. Since September, I have never ridden on it, but I do not feel. In bringing it full circle, was it worth it? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
This was a revenge fantasy gone wrong. Yeah. I thought that seeking revenge on these people would bring me joy. It brought me none. It was a momentary high, which was quickly followed by feeling shame. Like
wow,
agony.
That's funny.
And I know. I am the queen of feeling agony. Yeah. About a quick flash decision and then the what are the consequences? Like I'm the queen of the consequences.
And I'm the king of revenge because this seems like something I would do.
Oh, you, God, yes.
Yeah, that you would kill me about because I would feel like the universe owes me and you know that's not their bike and I would feel righteous in doing it.
Yeah.
But what you would feel maybe guilty after doing it.
I would have cried.
Yeah, I was a mess. My husband felt sore. He was like, well, this is, you followed through, you got it. This is the consequence. Deal with it. Like, that's just it. He felt less.
So he would be a good apocalypse team member.
Yes.
Yeah. I would just think, like, which and how many crotches were on the seat.
Yeah, I mean,
that I would get.
Like, bed bug. There might be
bed bug. Woman was using that bike for a week, I would say.
I was scared.
I would. But I know what you
but I have
sort
a new,
of the dominoes start going and you can't.
Yeah, and I have my own seat.
I'll tell you what you can do.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have to sit on the bed. You can build around
that.
Seat. Yeah.
I'll tell you what you could do with that bike. You could just donate that bike to charity.
I might have to.
All right. I think on the scale of things, like, I think there's a way for you to karmically climb back up the ladder. I don't think this is a one where they take the ladder away and just leave you in the pit.
Yeah. Like I'm not going to hell for this.
No, you're not going to hell. I think there are steps you can take to like...
The door opened for me.
Yeah,
like,
the door's open.
You can save yourself.
Yeah, I think it's fine. And I understand exactly where the feeling of like... I had a bike stolen out of my garage and it was my bike that I'd had since college.
Yeah.
And the wrath and the just the sheer... betrayal that I felt like this bike was like an extension.
It turns
of me.
You into something different that you're not. Like briefly, be like the gardeners are liars.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, no, it turned me into a 50-pound heavier person too, because that was my bike that I rode everywhere. And then when I wasn't riding the bike and didn't at that time have money to buy a new bike, I gained 50 pounds.
How does guilt generally affect you? Do you dream about it? Do you
just talk
about it?
So guilt is big in my life. It haunts me. I don't dream about it, though. Right. I just like obsess internally.
Right, right. It's the
Matt
sort of
dreams
internal monologue.
All of his guilt.
Of
his guilt and his anger and his childhood like betrayals, they all come out in dream form.
It's borderline meaningless guilt.
Yeah.
Because you can't do anything about it. You don't know. There is another side to it. But sometimes with those sort of instances, I would think about them and I would fixate on them and I would stuff them down. And previously, because I'm bipolar, they would come back because I stuffed them down much bigger and sort of manifest in a power punch that would lead to like, I don't know, like a depression or something like that.
It's like how
because I think when you stuff down guilt, it does. Yeah,
where like the first time you just get hives, and the second time you're exposed, you get like an anaphylactic.
Absolutely, that is a great analogy. Yeah,
somebody here's a medical person. No on the was it worth it front. One no. Okay. So I think I'm going next.
I can close it out.
So now we will confront.
I've never been a closer.
Scenario number two in the department of was it worth it. And this is a story about a kitty cat. So what I have found in life is that there are people who love cats, people who tolerate cats, people who are allergic to cats, and people who could not give two shits if there was a cat in their life, right? And all four of those choices are equally valid. And I've had cats all growing up, but they were, you know, the family cats, right? And I moved out here to LA in 2002 to be with some guy. And I lived in an apartment in West Hollywood, and it was a no-pet apartment. And that was fine because I was like not ready for my own pet. Like I was working at CBS News. I was traveling all over the country. Like I was not ready to care for something because I was too busy trying to figure out whether this yo-ho and I were going to make it through. And so we happened to live down the block from a vet. And this was like one of the best. This is like the Cadillac of veterinarians. And one evening I'm sitting in this apartment with my roommate and we hear this just like plaintive mewling outside in the bushes outside our window. And I, as a cat owner, was immediately like, we were doing something dumb, like cooking dinner or drinking or whatever. And I was like, did you hear that? Did you hear it? And I was like, it's a cat. So I go outside in my bushes and pick up this scraggly, flea-ridden little white and orange kitten. And it's you could tell it's going to be a long hair. It's white with these orange patches on its head, big, bushy orange tail, and it's adorable. And I like bring it inside and my roommate, who's not a pet person, is like, but she goes out, she gets litter and some food and I start defleeing the cat and like, you know.
You tricked her into having a cat because she was on Vicodin from a dental procedure.
Yeah. And
right?
I said, oh, we'll just keep it overnight and then bring it to the vet. And then I remember like trying to put the cat on the ground. It kept jumping up on the bed and Matt was not there. Like we were not living together at that point.
And I was off doing my own thing. I wasn't fully invested.
And I was
in
like, this is a
yet.
Flea-ridden creature. I should not allow it in my bed. But it was like so cute and scared and whatever that I just like picked I was like picking fleas off of it. And then I just put on a big knit hat and it went boop on top of my head, and I was its mommy forever, and that was it. And so we were totally sold on the cat. And Matt was a little less sold because the cat had a habit of biting his toes. So much so.
It was a little kitten that had razor sharp teeth.
Yeah.
We're just talking about me having dreams. I would have these literal, very literal dreams where I was like, my feet are caught in a blender. And I wake up and the cat would going at me with his razor sharp feet on my on the bed in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And so we named
the cat. So everybody's toes.
Well, I don't know why it didn't get my toes. Maybe Matt's toes stuck out. It had bigger toes.
Huh.
So we named the cat Bitey. Named after that Simpsons episode where there's like a raccoon. What was it?
We call the big one Bitey.
Yeah. So that was our cat.
It's the monorail episode.
He was a once in a lifetime cat. He was spectacular. He was more like a dog. The love that he gave and like the affection that he had were very uncat-like.
Because I wasn't a cat person. Mm-hmm. And I love this cat, you know, like just, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, in what sense, though?
Right. Just like
more like affectionate.
He wanted to always be with you. He wanted to always cuddle. You could like actually hold him like a stuffed animal and he would just cuddle with you.
Like Jax.
Yeah, like Jax.
Yeah.
And he was funny and he had a sense of humor and it was just like a person.
Funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mostly dick jokes, but he told them so smart.
He just like had a playful spirit.
I totally get it. My cat that is
you
like
don't,
that.
That you don't always get in a cat. Like, cats have a reputation, well-deserved, for being indifferent.
Right.
Yes. Right?
Exactly.
So, unfortunately, we found out that this cat that had been astray had feline leukemia virus. And that's why it had been dumped at the vet. But instead of staying in the box, probably with all its other siblings, it took a hard left and ended up under our window. We were like, okay, fine, whatever that means. We don't care. We're keeping the cat. We moved to our place, which is from this apartment to this new place, which is like our little home with a garden. The cat loved the garden. It was like, it was a cat amongst the splendor. And many happy years passed until that. So we got the cat in 02. So in late 2005, now this little tiny kitten has become 16 pounds of man cat. Right? Wow. He's this long, white, flowing hair, this big, bushy, orange tail. Like, this is a king of cats. Mm-hmm. And he starts having trouble. Like, we used to feed him up on the kitchen counter because we didn't want ants to get in the house. And so that was, like, the least likely place. He used to always jump up, eat the food, jump down. And he starts being able to not jump up. And Matt likes to make fun of him for it. Like, oh, buddy, you got so fat.
Me and Dave were like, come on, you could jump up to get that food. What's wrong with you? He's just lazy. It
was right.
Like, and that was one of those things where I felt so guilty later that I did that.
That it almost drove you mad.
Yes. Like,
and then around the end of 2005, the cat stops being, like one morning, stops being able to walk on his back legs. And so we take him to the vet. They can't see him. We take him to the emergency center. They take one look at him and send us to an animal surgery center.
Oh, my God.
And through many very expensive tests and procedures and process, we find out that he has a tumor on his spine.
Ooh.
Now, obviously, this cat can now no longer walk with its back legs. So the obvious thing that you would do is put the cat to sleep.
Oh, I was going to say put the hind legs in like a wagon.
Right. Oh, you're already our kind of people.
Because I knew a dog that happened to.
At every point along the way, all the vets we ever met were like, you would be well within your rights to put this cat to sleep. Because also, he could neither pee nor poop.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
so it's almost like the more humane thing to do.
Yeah. The more, But so we would confront this issue like, should we put the cat to sleep? And it's hard to look back now and realize, but in every new relationship, there is a thing or a moment or an animal or a something that bonds you forever to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a tumultuous early go, Matt and I.
Sure.
And this cat, the care and love of this cat was like the little horcrux in which our entire relationship rested.
Mm-hmm.
And this happens a lot with people and pets. Like, sometimes you can't remember to be kind to people, but you can always find kindness for a pet, I hope, or else you're a sociopath. So we were not ready to give up this cat because, A, there was still so much life and love in his eyes and happiness and whatever. So we kept bringing him, like we brought him, the thing was to try to shrink the tumor and bring him to like kitty chemo. And what I found out, like I went through levels of like concentric pet hell that some people know, but many people don't, which is if your pet is undergoing kitty cancer treatment, they take your pet to the vet, you drop him off, they sedate him, they drive like him and 10 other cats to UCLA where they have like the radiation chamber or whatever. And then they line up all the knocked out cats and send them through like one cat at a time, like cat in, zap, cat out, cat in, zap, cat out. And they get their radiation treatment. Poor Julia, I'm sorry.
It's like, you're making little English muffin pizzas.
And then they truck them all back to the center and then they wake them up. And I would do this, like this is basically my entire 2006, was taking the cat to the kitty cancer unit, getting incredibly expensive treatments. We took him down to a cat neurologist in Orange County. And like, he was still like so alive. And I had to learn how to express a cat's bladder and make him shit.
Oh my God.
Yeah, you don't want to know.
No, I do.
It's like a little cat water gun.
Like, yeah,
it's
like no catheter, because he would have just, like, that's a short term. They have to be pretty sedated to have a catheter in. So I learned how to, you take the cat and you hold him still over the toilet, ideally. And his bladder, when full, feels like a balloon. Mm-hmm. And you take it and you squeeze it in a firm outward motion. And it goes
and right into the toilet. And it's a skill. You can't find it right away. You sort of look around for it. You actually have to have a touch for it that you have to find eventually. Like finding a clitoris. Only male on the podcast.
Your actual hand movements look like you're like cupping balls.
No, but it isn't. It's like that.
You go away and I'd be terrified because I would be like, all right, what are the stakes? I have to pee him out twice a day. And it's very hard to find it. Jenny showed me. And the only stakes are if I don't figure it out, he'll die. You know, so I'm like, I have to find this little like balloon.
And poop was worse.
Like shoot it into the toilet. And the cat would really not feel anything. The cat would just be
because
like,
because he was totally paralyzed. You know, paralyzed.
Like just waiting, and then you'd pee it out, and then you'd do it again at the end of the day.
So the other thing was that you could walk him still if you grabbed his tail, which he also couldn't feel, lifted him up, and then his useless back legs were free and off the ground, and he would run like a motherfucking bat out of hell. Just using his two legs, and you had to run to keep up with him, and we would run his ass around the neighborhood and up and down the driveway. And like Matt remembers, like I used to have a poker club with these guys that I met at the Michael Jackson trial, all these reporters. And one time they came to my house and there was this like hard bitten reporter from the New York Post who like, he was like hardcore, like you didn't mess with this guy. And every time like Matt would walk past the poker game at our house, holding the cat's tail, just like dirty, dirty, dirty.
It would be like a movie because their poker game would be in the foreground, and I'd keep going back and forth with like a cat wheelbarrow to get things.
And this hard bitten like reporter from the New York Post would just be like, "Hi, I don't know if I could take this. Like, it's so sad."
Oh my God.
Like, and we had kids. Meanwhile, the financial end of it was this was bankrupting us. Like, I had a little tiny inheritance from my grandmother who had passed in 2001, and I was working a full time job at CBS, but like, I looked it up. It was more than $10,000 over the course of a year, like $10,000 to $15,000, especially considering the interest.
Yeah.
And I used up a lot of that inheritance money that if I still had it now would probably be worth $100,000.
Wow.
And so, but to me, I was saving love. I was saving our love, Matt and mine's love. I was saving a cat who loved us so unconditionally. Like, you could just lie with him in bed and just, like, hold him like this, and he would just purr and be the happiest cat in the world. And so the question of was it worth it was constantly, constantly being assessed by all parties. Like, don't go to work on a Monday and tell your hard-bitten CBS News coworkers that you just spent several thousand dollars to try to save your cat. Because we had this one correspondent who was like a legend and would be like, well, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard. You know, like you just don't say it. Like, so I learned to like seriously compartmentalize that part of my life. And I remember this one time, this is really dumb what we did, but you weren't there. I was taking the cat to the Orange County neurologist and I missed the exit off what is the 57, which takes you down from, you know, Northern Orange County down to the sea. So I missed the exit. And there was a time, like, Matt, you know, when you have a husband or a partner and they're, you're lying in bed together and they're like, say, Matt here, what do you think Bitey would make of the ocean? And I was like, he wouldn't like it. He would not like, cats don't like the
but
ocean.
Who doesn't like the ocean?
No, no, no. He would run away and we'd never see him again. And this is when he had legs. And so I found myself heading towards the water with a cat in a carrier. And I was like, this is the thing with Matt Flanagan's suggestions. They worm their way into your mind. And I was exhausted and just petrified and sad and feeling guilty. And so I took Bitey to the beach. And I opened up the car, and he had no back legs, so the guy was not going very far in the sand. And I opened it up, and he like took one little peek around, and then ran back in the thing with his ears flat. It was like, it was too much. The vast emptiness of this beach, and he just started to wail, like, rah! He was like so terrified. And all these people are looking at me, and I'm like, okay, I am the crazy fucking cat lady with a cat at the beach, and there's nothing I can do about it. And I thought, this is the dumbest thing I've ever done. And then I realized, like, that urge to show people or cats or whatever the ocean is not about the pet. It's about the ocean. It's this weird notion that everybody should see the vast expanse once. And that by seeing it, you are forever changed. And at least you have seen something. And, like, putting that on a cat is borderline insane. I grant you this, but it was this notion of like, if this cat's life is so short, he was like 4 years old, if this cat's life is going to be so short, he should have at least seen the sea. Right? And so we get back in the bag, put him in the car, go to the kitty neurologist, spend another $1,000. Right? So eventually in early 2007, I'm in New York working. I just left CBS and I was now working for Dan Rather Reports. And while I was there, I'd just gotten off Mount Hood and I flew to New York with the tape. And it's another story for another time, but Bitey died. And so Matt was going through his own grief and trauma, which he will share someday as a separate story. And I was in New York. And so as you do, I went and sought the comfort of friends. And I was sitting there with my one friend who I'd known since college, and she was appropriately like, I'm so sorry, so whatever. And her husband, who I've known since my very first day of work at CBS News in like 1998, he turns to me and says, pretty callously, he says, so you must feel pretty stupid, huh? And I was like, what, why? He was like, well, you spent all that money on a fucking cat, it died. And first of all, it's been like, what, a decade, and I've never forgotten. Like, I've never forgotten, and I've never forgiven him. And so, like, he's basically a walking dead man to me. Not that he would ever know, but
well,
I was
now
like,
he might.
Now he might. And that's fine. Some people are just like that. And what I've learned is that what those people really want is they want you to acknowledge your own stupidity. And so I just did. I was like, yep, pretty stupid, and just like marched on the conversation, because what they want is to get a rise out of you. Mm-hmm. And just like wreck you a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, but I thought about it and I was like, all right, was it stupid? And I thought about, now I think about like all the things that we could have used that money for. And yet, I don't honestly think.
Because how much time extra did you get?
Mm-hmm. A year.
A full year extra with the cat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we, in the taking care of the cat, it bonded me to Matt, and it made me realize that I could trust Matt. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It made me realize that I like loved Matt, and I loved how much he loved the cat, and that it was just like I was certain of our relationship in a way that I never had been before. And frankly, by the end of that year, we were engaged. And so to me, I guess I think like it was worth it, because I paid all that money. We paid all of Matt's money too. We paid all that money for love. And I think about it and I'm like, well, if I would do that for a cat, and this is what I would say to like the guys who are like, well, don't you feel stupid? Not irresponsible? Like your kids are going to go to community college, which is true. If we ever have kids, they will go to community college because we have no money to pay for it. So I think, well, now you know what I would do for a cat. What do you think I would do for you? Like, haven't I just shown you that I'm a boundless person who will fight to the end for anybody. And those people will never know and they'll never understand, and that's fine. But I know. And Matt knows. And Matt knows what I'll do for him, and he knows what he'll do for me. And God forbid Jax ever runs into problems, like, at least now GoFundMe exists, you know? Yeah. Right.
And it makes me feel...
And people will fund Jax.
Oh, people will fund Jax. Like, yeah. God forbid, that dog will get good medical care because he is beloved.
And it warms my heart, and it makes me feel faith that I know that if I ever lose the use of my legs, you'll walk me around like a wheelbarrow.
I might put you in a wheelbarrow because I don't know if I could lift you.
Yeah.
But yes, I will.
She'll be by your side.
Yeah, and I think I got to experience grief in like a safe way too. That now I know how to handle it, because like, oh my God, it was like perpetually sad, exhausting, scary. And, you know, I know what people go through, God forbid, when they go through that with a kid, which is a million times worse. But right. So, yeah.
So it was worth it?
It was worth it. That is my conclusion. It definitely sealed the deal on you.
Thanks, and Bitey.
Thanks, Bitey. I've been regretting it ever since. Yeah.
Thanks, Bitey. I could be New Orleans now. New Orleans, living the life of a bachelor.
Yeah. No, it was worth it. It was worth it all around, and I'll never forget my first pet. Yeah. You know?
I think of that too, and I think of for me how it relates back to Julia's story, where just those little moments that you can get guilty mm-hmm, over that mm-hmm. you don't think you will. Mm-hmm. But like when we got Bitey and we found out that mm-hmm. had feline leukemia, didn't manifest any symptoms. And there were 4 years of a cat that right. was amazing that made you forget that mm-hmm. he had, you know, a death sentence. Mm-hmm. You completely went out of your head. So that because, you know, when Bitey was always like a cat with huge legs, it would be like, pshoo, jump up to the counter every day to eat. That I remember Dave and I, like, we were like middle schoolers making fun of him. Like, come on, Bitey. And I like lifted him up. And Dave was like, why are you going to lift him up like that? Let the cat be a man. Let the cat just jump up. If you jump it up before, you should jump up now. I was like, oh, you're right, Dave. Ha, 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 ha. And like when I found out he had a tumor on his spine and later on had no legs and was dragging himself around, I like it kind of internalized that guilt and it wrecked me. It fucking wrecked me.
Yeah.
Because God, I just felt so bad that I had been, even though the cat would never know.
Cat wouldn't
that
know.
I was
yeah.
being that way, you know?
Yeah. Well, he lived a good life. He was super happy. He opened up a kind of love that we didn't know we had. Mm-hmm. And that we now know, and that is priceless. Like, that totally. Is a priceless gift to have. And, someday maybe the universe will come back and I'll get that $15,000 back.
Yeah, that is. It would be nice to have that $50,000.
Yeah. But you know what? I'll just keep saying it.
Yeah, money.
Love is priceless.
Love is priceless. Money comes and goes.
I give all my love to you, though my heart's been broke 1,000 times in 2. And yes, that should make me stop, but in fact it's quite the opposite. I give and I will give my love to you. I will give my love to you.
It was winter, and I was visiting my dad lives in Cleveland, where I'm from, for most of the year, but he also has a house in Florida. So I always make it a point, since I live in Boston, a cold place, to go to his place in Florida at least once every winter because it's warm.
Is it something you look forward to, or is it like, gotta go to Florida now, the weird state?
A little bit of both, I would say. Like, right. I definitely look forward to, just as I look forward to here, kind of getting away from the cold. Mm-hmm. Like, in February, it's like the best time to go for a long weekend. Right. Like, I don't care if I do nothing besides lie in the sun and have it warm and not freezing. Right, so that's kind of why I go. But yeah, it comes with the stress of being with family and my father and blah, blah, blah.
And being with Florida.
Exactly. Yeah. Although I'm there for such a short time, like, I don't care. I'm like, it's just sunny and it's warm and it's moderate and like things are getting paid for without me taking out my wallet once. Like, it's nice to be taken care of still. So it was one of those long weekends. I was down there. And the other thing about Florida is, despite the fact that I live on a coast, on an ocean, I mean, for those of you, obviously you've been to, you know, the East Coast, where the ocean there is very different on like the Boston end of things. It's freezing.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's like not really fun to like kind of go swim around in the water.
You have to will yourself. You do. It's numbing. You have to will yourself
and stay in for
painful.
Like a second. And yes. you're like, okay, I'm not boiling hot. Like, but now I can't feel my feet. Yes. So, but this, the Gulf is so different. So it was like, I really wanted to go in the ocean when I was there. Even if it was the last day of my trip, I was saying to my dad, like, can we just drive to the ocean really quick? We'll go to the beach. I'll jump in for a little bit. Like, it's supposed to feel like bath water. And he was like, you know what? Sure, I can get into that. And I like kind of couldn't believe he was saying it. I was right. like, yay, father-daughter time. Like, I asked my dad all the time, like, let's go bowling. He's like, bowling? Why would I want to go bowling? He never wants to do anything like this. So he's like, you know what? He's like, we can make an hour out
Everybody
of this.
Everybody wants to see the ocean.
Yeah. He's like, you know what? I can get into it. I got some business calls to make. I'll, you know, let's bring the chairs. We'll, you know, plant ourselves on the beach. You go in the ocean. I'll make some calls. And then I'll take you to the airport. I'm like, perfect. So we go to the beach. Load them all up, load all the chairs, whatever. I got my water bottles. I'm like so excited. We find a nice spot on the beach. And also like the beach is just huge. And it's like, you know, it's filled with people, but not too many. Like it's this very right. idyllic kind
there's,
of
picture. There's a different quality to the beaches down there. The sort of white sand.
White sand,
and
exactly.
It's like nothing you've seen when you're from the East Coast.
It's really
you know?
Pretty. It's really pretty. And also the other thing is that the ocean itself is like this really beautiful sandy bottom. Right. And that's the other thing in Boston or Maine or whatever. Like
the rocks.
It's like barnacles yeah. and like it's rocky.
Seaweed.
Seaweed,
yeah.
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So everything about it was great. So I sat, I like waited until I got super, super hot. I'm like, I'm going in. My dad's like already on the phone doing his thing.
I'm doing a deal.
Totally. That's exactly
I'm doing
what
a
he's
deal.
Like. He's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. He like has no time for me when he's on the phone. So I find a nice spot, walk into the water and just dive in. And I'm like immediately so happy. I'm like, oh my God, this water's amazing. Like, why did I not come every single day I was here? I know this is like a quick trip we took to the beach, but like already it's worth it.
Yeah.
Like, I love the feeling. So
and
I'm
it's
just
in the
like,
winter. This is happening in the
totally.
Winter. And
it's,
that's
it's
being
it's
from
in
East
January,
Coast.
February.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this feels so good for my body. So I'm just swimming out. And let me just say, too, like, I'm not a really strong swimmer. Like, I know how to swim, but like, swim team would be something that would
right.
really scare me.
Yeah.
Like, that would never be something I would do. Like, I know some strokes. But
where
like,
did you learn? Self-taught or camp? Or camp?
Camp.
Me too. Me
yep.
too.
Camp yeah. in the summers, totally. But I'm like doing stuff. I'm like, side stroke. Let me do the side stroke for a while.
That's
I'm
what
like,
you could do when the water's warm.
It's
you don't
warm.
Have to get out immediately.
And it's not, the bottom
not big
is lovely.
Waves too,
there's
right?
not big
yeah.
waves. So I'm swimming out and I'm like kind of far out mm-hmm. at this point. I'm like, okay, this feels really good. But there's like people in the water mm-hmm. and I like go under, whatever. I'm like feeling so good. And I'm just kind of treading water and I notice out of the corner of my eye, a shark.
No.
Yep.
It was like my worst nightmare.
It was a nightmare. Oh, and let me backtrack for a moment and tell you that while my dad and I were driving to the beach, we had just been discussing the marathon bombings in Boston.
Right.
And this is another thing that I do. Like you guys were talking about like the guilt that you feel and
sure.
how you like work it up in your mind. Well, I, in this moment, you know, your mind works so fast. Even though like my only instinct in this moment was survival, my mind was still working a mile a minute. With like,
yes,
this is
yes.
how it's going to happen to me because we were just talking about how people lost appendages
yeah.
in the bombings. And I'm like, oh my God, like we were just talking about it. In fact, like even right now, I feel like
they didn't see it any sooner than
yeah.
you would see this happening to
exactly.
you.
Exactly. And also like this, we were saying to each other like, oh my God, that would be so bad. Like your legs get blown off, like yeah. da da da. And I'm like, well, this shark is going to like bite
oh
off one
gosh.
Of my appendages.
How
this
big was it?
I could only see like part
tip
of it.
Of the fin.
I don't think it was like super big. Mm-hmm. It was like big enough that I was like, oh my God, I have to get out of here. Let me swim as fast as I can to shore.
How far was it? Like from?
I would say 20 feet.
Wow.
I mean, it was not
oh
that
my
far.
God.
But it was not swimming like towards me.
Swims
right.
faster
oh
than
my.
You.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my heart starts racing. I'm thinking, oh my God, not only am I going to lose either, you know, an arm or a leg, I remembered also in the moment, holy shit, I've got my period. And I'm like, oh,
oh
the shark
my
definitely
God.
Smell yeah. my blood,
yeah.
my menstrual blood. And
oh
I'm like,
God.
These are the things I'm thinking about. While I am as fast as I possibly can with my tiny little like, nothing swim stroke swimming for the shore, thinking like, oh, I'm definitely going to be able to outrun.
It's
or
funny
swim
that you
had
the presence of mind to realize that, that like I'm a,
I was like,
self-chumming.
Do I have a tampon?
Oh my
in?
God.
Is that going to plug up the blood that the shark will like be
oh
in love with?
This is like Jaws.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Punish.
It is.
You okay?
Punish
you broke
for being a woman.
So I'm like,
it would be the first time, I think.
Yeah. What's that?
No, I'm just making it up.
For the first time, punished for being a woman?
Totally. So I'm like, oh my God, I gotta go. And as I'm swimming, I'm doing a number of different things. Besides thinking all these things, I'm going to die, I'm going to lose a limb, yes. I have my period, and the shark can smell it.
Right.
And I must swim as fast as possible. I'm also seeing no one's in the water anymore.
Oh my God.
Everyone else knows.
Totally. And not only is nobody else in the water, I can see again, like in my peripheral vision, because I'm like swimming and also looking up every second to be like, oh man, like what's happening? Yeah.
And with that not so fresh feeling, it might be hard to get a date with a shark.
Oh my God, Flanagan.
So.
Boo. I knew it was coming. Representing the male contingent. Help me out, guys. Help me.
So you're drowning. Anyway, I'm seeing not only have people stopped being in the water, but also a number of people on the shore are pointing into the water. So they're like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. It was like Jaws. Like it was like I was in the movie and I'm swimming, swimming, swimming. I like keep also trying to see if I can touch because I think maybe I can like run on the sandy.
Right. What was time doing? Because you know how like when you're going to have a car accident, time has this weird speeding up, slowing down feeling. Was it feeling slow or was it feeling very, very fast?
I don't even know. It was just like it was chaos and
sheer
panic. Right. Total, complete panic. Mm-hmm. Like I've been in other situations. Water does that for me. Like I've been in other situations where I was on a like whitewater rafting thing mm-hmm. and our boat flipped. Yeah. And it was the same kind of feeling of just God. Like, oh my God, water's coming over me and I can't breathe very well. Right. And I'm trying to figure out like how to save myself. And like
and all the other people on the raft would know you had your period.
Oh my God. Flanagan, I am going to shut it down.
No, what? That's a big part of the story.
I know it is. But look at it. You're looking at three women, all of whom suffer the pain of potential motherhood. Just shut it down,
all right,
okay?
All right.
Pick another recurring
joke. Go on with your shock tale.
So anyway, so I'm doing all this stuff. It's all happening at once. I'm like looking for my dad on the shore. I realize also that, as you know, like the current has also kind of pulled me further down. So I'm like so far away from anything recognizable in terms of like where I walked into the water.
But do people see you? Like, are they pointing like, there's that shark
they were
and
pointing,
you?
They were pointing at the shark. Okay. They were pointing at like so close to me, but not to me. So I'm like, again, swimming, swimming, swimming. Arms are getting so tired. I'm choking water. I'm trying to like reach down with my feet. And finally I do feel the shore mm-hmm. or not the shore, the sandy bottom. Yeah. So I'm dying. Arms are so tired. I run, 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 swimming, 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 and finally, and keep also looking back, but not to waste a lot of time.
Right.
Look back and
never
see
look
like,
back.
How much, you know, how close is it to me? I finally get to the shore, collapse in a heap on the shore. Like there's sand in my bathing suit, in my mouth, water, I'm coughing.
Oh, God.
My arms are just like, you know, when you've worked
burning.
Out so hard, burning.
Yeah.
I can't just lift my arms.
Limp.
And also I'm just scared. I'm like checking my own pulse to make sure that like, I'm not going to die. Breathing, catching my breath. And I hear pitter patter on the sand of, as I look up, what I see to be three young kids that are... I would say maybe 7 years old, 6, 7 years old. And I think like coming over to be like, oh my God, are you okay?
Yeah.
Like, you know, their parents may be close behind. Pitter patter, pitter patter, patter. I'm like, oh my God, I'm dying. The kids look over me. They're dripping wet themselves. And they just look at me. They go, oh my God, that was so cool. You were so close to that dolphin. I was like, I'm sorry, what now? That was a dolphin and not a shark at all. I just swam for my life from a dolphin. And also, ironically, I've always wanted to swim with dolphins.
Right. You're like, I know. This was not
you could have cuddled.
There was a family of dolphins. Apparently, it was quite beautiful for the people that were pointing from the beach. I was swimming for my life and almost died. And yet, it was just dolphins frolicking in the water.
And the people watching were like, look at the cute girl swimming with the dolphins.
Oh, everybody was super psyched that they could see a family of dolphins. Yeah. No one was scared for their
life. The dolphins are like coming to you. They're like, can we play with you? Oh, like a little psyched. Puppy dog.
Absolutely.
Aww.
And so I'm
but
like.
But look, one of the dolphins is bleeding. Good night, everybody.
I'm going to throw something at you.
I will do it.
It's been done.
So
she's got the glass bottle. Watch out. I'll cut you.
I catch my breath. I come to terms with the fact that I just was swimming with dolphins and thought it was a shark. And I walk back to my dad, who I'm like, oh my God, like I have to like be with family at this point because I'm so like, despite the fact that I knew that I was not in danger, the feeling.
No, you can't shake adrenaline.
No, no, exactly. And there is a saying, there is a saying that a man's walking through the woods and he feels through the jungle, he feels a snake brush up against him and he freaks out and he turns and he looks back and he sees that the snake was just a curled a stick,
vine.
But has he not still experienced the snake?
Oh. Right.
Because as far as you're concerned, that was a shark.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
You felt the adrenaline and the terror of a shark.
And also the fact that I was completely convinced I was going to die or lose a limb or whatever. Like, those feelings were still in me.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say, like, for days. Like, I felt traumatized.
I
walk back to the place where my dad was. He's still on the phone.
I'm making deals.
On his
Your
chair.
Dad and my dad should go for a schmear.
Oh my God. I was like, Dad, like, did you see what just happened? I'm like, I look like I'm a mess. And he's on the phone. He goes, I saw you, the dolphin. You and the dolphin. It was great. It was great. I'll be off the phone in a second. Everyone knew
me. Oh my God.
And I had to live with that for, like I said, a number of days.
You would get the reverberations of adrenaline, right?
That's right.
Like it would go, like again, out of nowhere.
Yep.
That's what happened when I got struck by lightning.
There aren't a lot of moments in most people's lives until it happens where they.
Yeah, he totally missed that. I just said I almost got struck by lightning. I know. I almost got struck by lightning at camp when I was like taking a kid in from the gazebo to the barn, and like we both almost got fried. And I would remember, like, every day for the next couple days, like almost just got hit by lightning. It was like I was experiencing it all over again, and I would just get this, like, huge adrenaline surge and, like, want to punch something.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It was scary. It was really, really scary.
Well, you do, that sort of speaks to what I was going to say, which is you don't... There aren't that many moments, I feel like, in a life, hopefully, you know, where you experience that feeling, which is, I could die.
It feels like it's near death.
Like, there's probably not a lot that you've had like that, right? That feels like, oh, if I don't play things right, this is the end.
Yep.
You know, I can't even think of one in my life right off the top of my head right now.
The time that my boat flipped felt the same
way. That's the same way, right. Like, yes,
it's
definitely.
Also the power of water. And
totally.
Water,
it's bigger than you.
It's bigger than you. It's bigger, way more powerful.
Yep, right.
It doesn't have a brain. It's not rational.
That's
it's not like, oh, we'll save you. It just does what it does. Yeah.
That's why you call the ocean or a boat a she, which is why I have the same respect for these three women here.
Oh.
The sheer power.
That's right. That's right.
I don't
know
which way
it's gonna go. Without even trying or noticing.
Dead in a moment.
Yeah.
One more period joke, and that's the end of Matt Flanagan.
You're not
going
to do.
Well, A, I'm glad you didn't die.
Thanks.
B, I'm glad you got to swim with dolphins, even if only in retrospect.
Did you go back? Jenny tells the story of having an instance where she was surfing and almost died. Did you go back and swim in Florida?
I have, but I still think about it and I don't go out as far.
All right. So in summation, was it worth it to have that beautiful moment in the ocean?
I would say the only reason deciding to make a quick trip into the ocean on the final day that I was in Florida, the only reason it was worth it is to be able to tell the story. But the panic was not worth it. Not worth it at all. If I could take it back, I would.
Was it worth it to have tasted death and survived, though, to know that you had that?
Nah, I don't need that. I work myself up too often about all these other things. I don't need more.
I have a really good imagination.
I don't need more. No. I don't need more things to worry about.
Yeah. Oh my God. Well, I think the ocean is a great mystery and a danger and a terrible beauty. And my cat.
As are these three ladies here.
Yeah.
Terrible beauties.
That's right. Well, keep drinking, Flynn. Keep drinking. Anyway, well, thank you guys so much for being on the show. Julia Grobe, is there a place people can find you on the internet?
Grob.
Shut up.
Shut your face.
Yeah, I guess Twitter or...
What's your handle?
I'm Julia Grobe, G-R-O-B, no E.
Anything you want to plug?
You have a web series?
I have a web series that's pretty awesome. It's like a Latino Cheers set in gentrified Brooklyn.
That's very funny.
It's called East Willy B. East Willy, WILLYB.com. Or on YouTube.
Is that like East Williamsburg?
Yeah.
Oh, see, I still got it.
Which is really Bushwick, which is the joke of the whole show.
Ms. Sarah Kleinman, do you live a private life or do you have a social media presence?
I don't even know how to answer that. I think I would like to say yes. I used to do, people can hear, I'll show you.
All right.
People can look up Boston Eats and my name.
Yep.
It's very amateur. It's something that my fans, I like to say my fans, have asked me to bring back on a number of occasions, but they're basically short, again, let me say the word amateur over and over again, short but edited video series about restaurant reviews.
Oh, cool. Oh,
fun. Yeah. So Boston Eats, they're just on YouTube. Some of them are not, you know, again, amateur. I've said
but now that you've survived
times.
A shark attack, a certain street cred.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, there's street cred for a number of reasons.
She can deliver a baby for you. Really?
I can deliver a baby if you need that. Yep.
I've you got bring some, life into this world.
Yeah. I'm known in that world.
Yeah. Well, Flanagan, I would give your Twitter handle, but you never use it. You never use it. I will say for these two fine people, make sure to check out Stuck in the Middle on the Disney Channel. You can check it out on iTunes. You can have the separate Disney Channel app for all of you cord killers. And check it out. It is a fun show. It really is. It's unlike a lot of other things that are on the Disney Channel right now. And I, for one, really like it.
Yeah, and if you want to check out my joke page, some of my writing at periodjokes.net.
Oh. Boo! Take him off the stage!
Get him off the stage! Boo!
Tomatoes! What amazing lessons we all learned this week. Turns out, dolphins don't care if you get your period. The dark thrill of vengeance may not be worth the marathon of guilt you run after, and all the credit card debt in the world can't weigh down love without sense or boundary. Speaking of love, thank you all so much for being patient with me as I get used to my new schedule. I love this podcast and all of you, and it's not going anywhere. Actually, it's going to Las Vegas, so expect to hear some fun road stories in the near future. Have fun, be safe, love big, and talk to you next week.